Thank you for coming back. This is day 5 of the Healthy Mouth World Summit. This live Q&A today we have scheduled is with Dr. Robert Gammel and Katie, the Wellness Mama. And we have Katie on the line already. I want to cover a couple things before we get rolling. First of all, we're going to have a really full call today. We have well over 100 people signed up for it, and people are trickling in all the time right now. We'll do our best to get all your questions answered. So like I just mentioned, for those of you just coming in now, it really is optimal to post your questions in the question box on GoToWebinar rather than having me clear the line. I had some trouble opening up the phone lines a couple of days ago on one of these Q&As, and the people weren't ready to ask questions, and it just took away from the time on the call. So I really want to get as many of your questions answered as possible. So by all means, the best way we found is for you to type in your questions into the question box. Of course, last, thank you all for your interest in educating yourself on how to navigate to greater oral health and finding the Healthy Mouth World Summit such a great avenue for empowering solutions. We are getting lots and lots of thank you emails, and we always appreciate your kind words and your support there. And of course, thank you, Katie, for coming in and being willing to field all these questions. It's been a tremendous turnout so far for all of these.
Thank you guys for having me.
No, it's so much fun to be able to pick your brain on stuff like this. I mean, you've done it. So Katie, let's just get rolling. We got a lot of questions for you here as it is. So let's just start off with these and we'll move from there. This first one from Carla. What do you think about using oral probiotics? Is it possible to make the oral bacteria normalize just by eating right and being healthy?
That's a great question. From what I can tell externally, and I'm not a dentist, but just even taking the probiotics internally, even from fermented foods and a healthier diet, will affect the probiotic balance in the mouth. And Dr. Fife mentioned in the presentations a lot about oil pulling. And there's some evidence that that can help balance out the good and bad bacteria in the mouth as well. But certainly, I don't think it'd be harmful to the mouth to use probiotics orally. And that might even be an easier solution for kids, because it can be hard to get kids to take probiotic capsules or to hide them in food. So that might be one solution if kids are willing to do that.
Yeah. You know, I think this is a really good question, Carla, and I'm going to chime in here on it. There's a lot of products on the market, you know, and I think that in the years to come, we'll see a lot more of like, take this probiotic in the mouth just for oral bacteria, you know, just for the oral ecological environment. And really what I want to address here, all of you don't know about this, we have a video on our site. We got lots of free video tutorials on the Oral Wellness site. You can go to orawellness.com. There's a video there called Mouth Probiotics that, in my opinion, and of course, I'm very opinionated about this, but also have, you know, a lot of experience under my belt in regards to this too. In my opinion, we have the probiotics that we need inherent in our body. In other words, if you're eating well and you're establishing a healthy ecological environment in your whole system, then really what we need to do is we need to proliferate that health into the mouth. And so this video called Mouth Probiotics shows you different techniques to increase your saliva production, which the saliva has everything we need as far as remineralizing our teeth, as far as fighting bad bugs. I mean, unless you have an imbalance in your mouth, I mean, here I am kind of selling you out of our products, but not really, because if you have an imbalance in your mouth, then it's helpful to knock down the bad bugs in your mouth and then to replenish them. See, the good news about products like what we sell, our oral wellness products, is that it increases saliva production rather than dries out the mouth. So with increased saliva production, you get increased enzymes in the mouth, you get increased immunological factors like lactoferrin that fight these bad bugs, as well as then the change in the pH, and you establish that optimal oral pH then too. Boy, I can be long-winded. Sorry, folks. Okay. There's a good question for you. I stocked up in June on grass-fed organic ghee, Katie. Would you expect this to have a similar impact as butter oil, or is butter oil essential for improving oral health? Coming from Lisa.
Hey, Lisa. From what I've researched, the butter oil is kind of the gold standard when it comes to remineralizing, but certainly ghee is beneficial also. And I've seen cases where people just took the regular cod liver oil, if that's all they could get at the time, and then incorporated ghee and lots of grass-fed dairy, and it also had a really beneficial effect. So I say the best would be to go with the butter oil. That's what we saw to be successful personally, but he's awesome. And if you have it, I would definitely use it.
Hmm. I don't even know the difference between ghee and butter oil. I mean, the butter oil just must be more concentrated, huh?
Yeah, it's much higher in vitamin K, I believe. But of course, ghee has that also. But yeah, more concentrated version.
Okay. So here's a question from Jan on Facebook. I'm curious how you feel about kombucha tea, since it's made with sugar to feed the culture. My understanding is that the sugar is used up after proper fermentation time. You want to touch in on that?
Sure. I actually have tutorials on my site for making kombucha. We drink quite a bit of it at our house. And you're right, most of the sugar does ferment out. There's still a little bit that's left, but it also contains all those beneficial enzymes and probiotics from the fermentation process, which, going back to that first question, feed the beneficial bacteria in the body. So my thought has always been, as long as your body tolerates it well and you're able to handle it, kombucha can be great.
Yeah, and I agree. And I would, you know, there's another question here right along the same lines asking about water kefir. I would throw into that, folks, that if you're going to, you know, moderation is really the key. If you're going to give, you know, have a drink like that around for you and your family, then, you know, I wouldn't recommend you drink glasses and glasses of it. Obviously, if it's a home fermentation, you can control how much sugar is left in it. So if you taste it and it tastes really sweet, then still, you know, let it ferment a little bit further. I got a blog post just bubbling out of me as soon as this summit has passed that's going to go into why I'm not a big fan of kombucha tea, but I'm gonna hold my cards close to my chest on this one today, and I'll share that with y'all shortly.
And one caution I would say is, if anybody who's new to kombucha or any fermented food or drink, is to start slowly. We've had several speakers talk about that Herxheimer reaction. Mm-hmm. And if you jump into that really quickly, you could end up with some uncomfortable symptoms. So that's my one caution, is start slowly. And if you're pregnant, you may want to wait till you're not pregnant to start.
Totally. I mean, it is a detox tool, folks. So be nice to yourself heading into it.
Definitely. And it's more potent than some people realize too.
Truly. I mean, I've actually done this. I'm like, wow, this is delicious. We make the homemade and drink and like, uh-oh, oops.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, another question here from Facebook from Adrian for you, Katie. She'd been pregnant or breastfeeding for almost 6 years. She's currently breastfeeding and trying to heal some pretty big cavities. She has severe TMJ. And also found out that she has a gut dysbiosis, a bacterial overgrowth. Sounds like a SIBO. What would you recommend for total body healing, especially the TMJ in the teeth? And you already had to have one tooth pulled, she says, and she's just wondering what your take on that all is.
Gotcha. I'm right there with her, being pregnant and nursing for the last 6 years, so I can sympathize.
Yeah.
And it definitely is a bigger nutritional demand on your body. So I'd say really focusing on the nutrient-dense foods like I talked about is very, very key. A book that goes into that really well is Deep Nutrition. And I think Dr. Shanahan's actually presenting.
Yeah, she is.
Isn't she in a few days?
Yeah.
So that might be really helpful. But for gut issues, the book Gut and Psychology Syndrome might also be a good starting point, just from the perspective of healing the gut. That was really helpful with one of our children who had some gut issues. But when I'm pregnant and nursing, especially, I really focus on the really high nutrient foods like the fermented cod liver oil and the really good sources of protein and the high potency vegetables and fermented vegetables. And my focus with food during those times, which is all the time for me, is not so much just eating foods that taste good or that I like, but really choosing the most nutrient dense options, since there's only so much food you can consume in a day.
True.
So make those really count.
Yeah. I think that's a really well put statement right there, Katie. I've for a long time said, when people ask about, you know, what do we eat and stuff like that, I'll say, you know, I don't really have the time or the space in my day to eat junk food or food that's not contributing to me, because I'm too busy trying to keep my system running well, and I have to put good foods in to do that.
Exactly. And if you're eating all those good foods and trying to get all those actual check marks in each day, you're not even hungry for any other food.
Yeah, truly. That's very accurate. So you just said something there that triggered me, and I'm gonna ask a question. What are those check marks to you on a daily basis?
Good question. So from the nutrition perspective for us, it's some kind of quality protein at every meal and some kind of vegetable at every meal, which could be a fermented vegetable or cooked vegetable or raw vegetable. We try to do organ meats at least a few times a week because those are, in a sense, nature's multivitamins. They've got, you can see the charts online where they compare like grass-fed liver to any vegetable, and it is not even a comparison. So they are, that's a hard one for a lot of people to jump into, but it's a really nutrient-dense food, so you don't have to eat as much of it to really get the impact. And we do bone broth every day in some form, even if I'm just adding it to something I cook so that it's kind of snuck in, because that's such a good source of minerals and the gelatin that's good for both the oral health and for gut health. So those are our big check marks. And then especially if there's any kind of oral health issue, we add in the fermented cod liver oil and butter oil and additional sorts of sources of good fat. And since I'm always pregnant or nursing, I also take about 4 tablespoons a day of coconut oil, either blended into tea or smoothie or somehow, just to get the extra good fats to keep my body going and keep my energy levels up.
That's a crack up. I'm always pregnant or nursing right now. That's your reality right now, honey. That's awesome. So I want to follow up with that because I remember when we spoke, a couple months ago, you just found out that you were pregnant and you were changing your diet. It's like you were stepping it up another notch. So we got a lot of moms on the call here. I'm wondering if you can explain, okay, what's your baseline? And then what did you add? Like, I think you just laid out the baseline. What did you supplement when you realized, oh, okay, here comes another baby. I got to put this back into my daily routine.
Gotcha. Well, for supplement wise, I actually take, if I'm even think it's potential to get pregnant, I start taking folate instead of folic acid. The folate is the more natural form, and there, I have some info on that online. And the fermented cod liver oil, I up my probiotics. There's a ton of really fascinating information coming out right now about how babies inherit the mother's gut bacteria during birth. So to me, keeping gut health really in line is a huge priority when I'm pregnant, since the baby is going to inherit that from me, and then that's going to be their foundation for their gut health their whole life. But the book Deep Nutrition, I mentioned before, really delves into how a mother's diet and pregnancy can affect the child's health for a lifetime. So since reading that especially, I've really focused on adding in, like I mentioned, those organ meats at least once a week, which my blood levels have been awesome this pregnancy. They're like, I've never seen a pregnant woman with iron levels like this. And the bone broths, which gives you so much energy too. And every morning I'll do sometimes a smoothie with like raw milk and fruit and coconut oil, sometimes gelatin, just all those nutrient-dense foods that I can kind of drink while I'm chasing kids. But just really focusing on adding in the extra nutrient-dense foods when I'm pregnant. And they say you're eating for two, but I prefer to think of it as you're nourishing for two. So you don't have to double your food intake. You just need to really up the nutrient-dense intake and keep the nutrient levels high.
Yeah, super awesome distinction. That's just, gosh, right on the mark. Okay, here's a question from Grace on Facebook. My youngest daughter has the extra tissue between her teeth that you spoke about, Katie. Two dentists and an orthodontist said it should be clipped. She's 11. Both my husband's brother and his mother and his nephew, his brother's son, have it. It seems genetic. What do you recommend? Her teeth are straight and her bite's good.
That is a good question. I wish there was a dentist on here to provide some better insight. I'm not a dentist, but I know for me that was the only solution they had at that point was to clip it. And unfortunately for me, I think either it wasn't done very well or just the inflammation from that. I had swollen gums in between my front teeth for a really long time afterwards. So even though my teeth were together, my gums were puffy and it didn't look good. And I've seen some research. I haven't looked into it too much, but from the Calcium Therapy Institute on the spaces between people's teeth, and I would hope maybe a dentist can weigh in more on that. My personal experience, I've only ever had mine clipped, which was uncomfortable. I don't know of another way, but I would hope there would be a natural way. So maybe a dentist can weigh in on that one.
Yeah. I wish. I'm looking, and I'm not seeing an email from Dr. Gamble. It could just be a time, you know, you got a time conversion thing and time zones, and who knows.
Right.
He does live out in the sticks, and I know that he was asking me if he could call in, And it's rather, as y'all know, it's rather cumbersome to call in and actually be able to talk on the phone, on the line too. So I sent him some directions. Hopefully we'll still be able to hear from him. Question here from Michelle on the call here. Is it optimal to get your raw milk and cream and grass-fed meats and organs from certain types of grass-fed cows? Wow, this is a detailed question, Michelle. Excellent question. For example, Jersey cows, I've read that they produce K2 milk and it's best. Is it okay if a cow is fed some grains, in your opinion? I'll chime in on this after you, Katie, since I got some cow experience.
Be the expert on this. I've seen some of that research too, that Jersey cows have the higher concentration of K2. The milk we get here is from Jersey cows, but it's the only one we can even get here. So I haven't tried a lot of other ones. There are not a ton of options where we are. From the best of my understanding, it's obviously optimal if the cow's only receiving that rapidly growing green grass and sunlight, which probably in Hawaii you guys have a lot better resources for than we do. But still, raw milk from grass-fed cows that get some grain is still preferable to organic store milk from cows that are probably getting all grain and that's also pasteurized.
Absolutely.
That's my take on it. But yeah, I'm sure you have some great insight.
I would really hit that exactly the same, Katie. I mean, there's really no right or wrong. It's not black or white for me as whether or not a cow should have grain or not. We don't give our cow any grain, but then again, she's on rapidly growing green grass 12 months a year here. So, you know, we've done this on purpose. What you want to know is that the cow isn't being pushed. So if, for example, you have access to a farmer that will sell you some fresh milk, or you know, it's legal in your state to have a cow show or however they do it, then what you want to look at is, and you'd be asking an educated question, and the farmer would be able to answer this, is at what percent is he or she feeding the grains to the cow? You don't want a cow having more than maybe 1% of their body weight of grain per day, because you realize that the more grain you feed a cow, or let's say the more feed you feed a cow who's lactating, the more milk that cow is going to produce. So you can push a cow as a dairy farmer and actually make that cow produce more milk than is best for her. And the milk becomes of a lower quality as well. So there's definitely something to be said for finding a farmer that isn't pushing his cows. As far as the type of cow, I really like the heritage breeds. I have a particular fancy for the Jerseys. They are the milk cow of history, and they were replaced by the Holstein. But this really isn't about cows, so I better shut up now. Okay, next question from Carla. Does dairy, buttermilk, cod liver oil actually have those fat-soluble vitamins in them, or do they just help the body absorb them better from other foods like fruit and vegetables? This is an excellent question. I would love you to dive into this, Katie.
Definitely. So the question is about if those dairy sources have the fat-soluble vitamins. And I would say yes, but to clarify, it depends on the source. All of them will have some degree of those fat-soluble vitamins. A lot of the ones at the store, they add in the vitamin D and the vitamin A, and it's pasteurized, so they're not as bioavailable. But if you're talking about raw dairy sources, especially raw fermented dairy sources, you're dealing with a much more bioavailable dairy source. And especially, like we've just been mentioning, from grass-fed cows, there's a much higher concentration of K2, especially. So I would say it depends on the animal's diet, but it definitely can be a good source of fat-soluble vitamins, but it also does help absorption of other fat-soluble vitamins from other sources. And you may be able to weigh in on this also.
I appreciate that. And I'm wondering if you want to follow up with this question. Would you explain to the listeners how this all works? Okay, so on one hand, people would say, well, you are what you eat. And then there are those of us who say, well, not really, because you are actually what you can assimilate, not just what you eat. So how does fat-soluble vitamins play in with... So on one hand, you're dealing with a mineral content, right? We all have to up our mineral content. And at the same time, we need to up our fat-soluble vitamin content to make those minerals bioavailable. Do you want to touch on that?
Definitely. And one resource I would mention here, Dr. Price was really big on the fat-soluble vitamins, and especially the vitamin K, which he called Activator X, for its ability to activate all those other vitamins. And that's one of the ones you get from the grass-fed dairy. But it's basically a synergistic process in the body, and almost like a snowball effect. So if you're getting the fat-soluble vitamins, you're going to be able to assimilate other minerals and other nutrients much more easily, even from sources like vegetables or other food sources. And those minerals will also help increase your stores of the fat-soluble vitamins in the body. So it's kind of like a snowball effect, that the more you're getting of each one, the more they work together.
Yeah, well put, well put. Here's a question off of Facebook from Rachel. After every meal, she says, I crave something sweet and usually have cookies or muffins that I make with coconut flour and honey. I'm trying to wean myself off of these, and it's difficult. Like today, she says she has Ezekiel Raisin Toast with ghee on it, which satisfies her about as much. Is this better or worse for me? And I think a broader question here is for the person who is craving sweet after a meal, and I'll chime in on that as well as if you want to touch on it too, Katie.
Yeah. Well, first on the question of if that's a healthier alternative, I'd say sprouted breads are to a degree, but a lot of the Ezekiel breads people don't know have added gluten back into them. Mm. So even though part of them is a better choice, they're not by any means like the perfect choice. And the coconut flour is the same way. It's another good choice, but the fact that craving sugar after every meal is a symptom of something else going on. So it's not just finding those healthier choices at the end of meals, but figuring out why that's happening in the first place. And I'd be curious, obviously, I don't think I can ask her directly, but if she's ever taken magnesium or fermented cod liver oil or gelatin, because those three seem to be supplements that help with the sugar cravings. The gelatin can be from bone broth, or I also sometimes drink just gelatin in tea at night, which makes sleep amazing. But the fermented cod liver oil really provides those fat-soluble vitamins and a sense of it really satisfies your hunger as well. And that I've seen help people with sugar cravings. For me, the magnesium helped a lot. Mm. Just getting my magnesium level up really reduced the sugar cravings. But those are the three that I've seen personally be helpful.
Yeah. I think that as a broad brushstroke here, and I'm going to generalize tremendously here, as a broad brushstroke, craving sweet, and I'm a recovering sugar addict myself. What is this? This is a Sugar Anonymous here or whatever. Sugar Addicts Anonymous. But really, if a person is craving sweet, as a broad brushstroke, their body is saying, I need protein. So what I would suggest to you, Rachel, is make sure, like Katie said, you know, one of her fundamentals here is to have some form of good quality protein at every meal, not every day, but every meal. And we have a neighbor here, a good friend of ours, who is a doctor, and he's just hammers on this. He's like, you know, how's your protein intake, to everybody that he talks to? And the guy's in his 60s and he can work me into the ground in the garden. So, you know, he's doing great. And I think that there's really something to be said for very, very regular amounts of protein. And this idea of actually skipping meals, or of the people who are grabbing a bagel in the morning, well, you know, you're really fouling the body there in the long run. You're just really robbing at the very basic level of your nutritional needs by hitting the body with a bunch of flour first thing in the day, when your body needs proteins to stabilize protein and fats to really normalize and keep the blood sugar healthy.
And to add to that, protein and fat both signal proper leptin response, which is that hormone that's responsible for feeling full. Exactly. And that's why, like, some people can sit down and eat easily a whole box of cereal without a second thought. But if you tried to sit down and eat 2 dozen eggs, you would hit a point and your body would say no more.
Yeah.
And it's because they trigger that hormone, that feeling of fullness.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the idea of, you know, Dr. Bruce has a book and Mary Enig has a book, that Eat Fat, Lose Fat. You know, if you're overweight and you take a spoonful of coconut oil before every meal, you will eat less.
Yeah.
Just because you just can't eat as much. Your just body goes, whew, I'm full already. Stop. So there's a tremendous amount of wisdom there, I think. I am going to touch on one other thing as far as sweet cravings. And I'm one of these people that is way outside the box and willing to dive into the taboos that you're not supposed to talk about. But parasites play a big role in sweet cravings. So, you know, the bottom line is if your system, and there are a lot more, you know, we deal with bad bugs, so we're kind of this type of person anyways. If you're dealing with sweet cravings, the chance of you know, being robbed essentially of your vital nutrients from some other organisms that if you don't want to go there mentally. But the bottom line is it's kind of like the bad bugs in oral health, that they're pretty darn widespread from my research. So you might want to look into that as well. And that's all I'll go to on that subject. Okay, here's a great question. You say you eat lots of seafood. Where do you get your seafood and make sure that it's wild caught and not contaminated? This is a huge issue. And I really appreciate, Cassandra, you saying this. We got a question from somebody else right along the same lines on Facebook. Will you cover that for us, Katie?
Yeah, definitely. I've researched this a lot, and unfortunately, there are not that many really perfect options anymore. One of the best I've seen that gets the best ratings continually year after year is called Wild Planet, and that's canned seafood, but that does also provide the bone-in fish like we talked about, and they are slightly more expensive, but you can buy online or places like Whole Foods usually carries them as well. And for fresh seafood, I've ordered from a place called Solomon Falls before that has smoked Alaskan salmon, and I've been able to actually talk with them as a company and verify that it's all wild-caught and sustainable and that their efforts are clean that way. It's also possible to find it at grocery stores, but I also think you're always running a risk there of how wild or how natural it actually is. Do you guys have any good resources for that?
No, you know, I mean, living here, you'd think that we're totally in seafood heaven. And frankly, what we see a lot of is ahi, which is a tuna. And I'm, you know, I've been enough looking into heavy metal toxicity now that I don't really feel like I need another avenue of contamination into my system, risking that.
Right.
So here's a question from Anne. And it's a loaded one, so I'm going to touch in on this too. From her, she's asking you, what would be good for her? She has osteoporosis. She eats for breakfast. She follows what's called the acid alkaline diet, she says. And she eats nuts as much as she can. She eats seeds, buckwheat, quinoa, and other flakes, yogurt, almond milk, plus fresh milk. Or excuse me, plus fresh fruit. I just threw in the fresh milk. And she has cavities and you might have a root canal. I think that you know, a blogger such as yourself has tremendous resources for somebody like you, Anne, who, and I think that really what we're dealing with by and large is, you know, we get emails literally every day from people saying, what's wrong with my oral health? I eat a good diet. And we don't qualify what a good diet is. We have so much misunderstanding around that subject. Several years ago, and I'll tell you guys a story quickly, and then I'll turn it over to you, Katie. Several years ago, I asked my brother-in-law, who is one of the smartest people I know, and he is our doctor, even though they live in Wisconsin. We'll call him and say, hey, we've got this and that going on. And he says, well, try this. So he's an MD. He's a medical doctor. He's also a doctor of oriental medicine and an acupuncturist, and he's also a kung fu school brother of ours. I mean, he's my wife's brother, and I've known him forever. So he's got a tremendous background of knowledge. And so I turned to my brother, John. This is many years ago, and I was reading stuff like Katie Shanahan's book, Deep Nutrition, and other books out there. And I said, John, it sure does seem to me that what we're shown in the media and in popular culture about diet is 180 degrees from what is right. And I'm calling you to have you tell me that I'm wrong about this, but this is what it's seeming like. And he laughed and he said, no, you're right, Will. It is 180 degrees. So, you know, you explain your diet here, but I don't see a lot of the foundations that a person would need. And if you're dealing with osteoporosis, then by all means, come listen to Hal Huggins' call about balancing your blood chemistry, or Pam Killeen's call on blood chemistry today, her presentation today. She's a wealth of resources on balancing blood chemistry. The bottom line is osteoporosis is not a calcium deficiency. By and large, it's a phosphorus deficiency, and you got a bunch of free calcium in the body because you don't have enough phosphorus for the calcium to bind with and make it a bioavailable. So with that, I turn it over to you, Katie. This is your question.
Yeah, that was actually going to be one of the first things I said. The presentations today were really helpful on that.
Big time.
But yeah, just as with teeth remineralization, it's not just ever calcium. You've got calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, and other trace minerals that are imbalanced. Especially with osteoporosis, I've seen the same information about just taking calcium alone can make the problem worse. And you really need, I've seen also focusing on the magnesium and getting good sources of phosphorus. But I get questions like this on my blog all the time. And unfortunately, I usually kind of shy away from them because there'll be questions along the lines of, well, I eat this perfect diet. I'm totally raw vegan. I don't eat any fat, all this kind of stuff. And why am I not healthy? And it's kind of a big gap to even start to explain. But like the books that we've mentioned before, Deep Nutrition is a good one for explaining the fundamentals of why those basics are so important. But I think it goes back to good sources of protein and sources of minerals like bone broth can be extremely helpful because it's easy to assimilate. It has the spectrum of minerals, not just calcium in an isolated form from a supplement, but also a whole lot of good fats. I've seen that help even with family members who had bone loss and taking the good fats. And I've also seen, just anecdotally, people I know who have suffered from osteoporosis typically don't consume that much fat, or if they do, it's not a good source of fat. So how we mentioned with the fat-soluble vitamins and the minerals going together, you need those fat-soluble vitamins and good sources of fat to be able to assimilate the minerals that'll help with the bones.
Big time. Yeah.
And for some people, removing grains or inflammatory foods can make a big difference, especially in the short term, since it'll allow you to assimilate things better while you're healing through that.
Yeah. I agree right there. So let's jump to a question here from Lindsay. You've been pregnant many times, obviously. Do you know enough about oil pulling to know if it's safe during pregnancy? And I'll touch on this after you.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what you'd say or what Dr. Fife would say. From the research I've done, since I was doing oil pulling before pregnancy, I felt comfortable continuing it during pregnancy. The biggest impact I've seen has been strictly in my mouth. I didn't have the crazy die-off effects or any signs of detoxing in the body, which I hope means I wasn't very toxic to begin with. I don't know. But my thought was just as oral health can easily decline during pregnancy when you've got the changing hormones and the increased nutrient needs, that for me that was something good to keep doing to keep my oral health in check so that I wouldn't have those problems, which has worked. And I know that might be a somewhat controversial opinion, but personally, I felt comfortable continuing oil pulling.
Yeah. I agree.
What's your take on that?
I totally agree with that, Katie. You know, we were on the Q&A yesterday with Dr. Cheryl Selman, who is, you know, world renowned on hormone balancing. She's a rock star too. And somebody asked about detoxing while breastfeeding, and she just flat out said, no, don't. Now, I think what we have to do is differentiate between, you know, herbal detox programs or fasting or whatever, obviously, and oil pulling. From my perspective, oil pulling is a pretty darn mellow detox tool. It's really a hygiene tool more than anything. Yeah, it's going to draw some toxins out of the system. And it's, from my perspective, though, I mean, anytime you're dealing with detoxification, realize what you're doing is you're taking away from the body. And to take away from the body, you're trying to take the bad away, but you lose some good too whenever you're detoxing. So if you're dealing with a situation like you're pregnant, you're breastfeeding, or if it's winter time, you want to be very cautious of initiating a detox protocol because you can deplete your body's immune stores, your immune capability, by depleting your body's nutrient stores by detoxing in those times. So always be careful. And that said, from my perspective, oil pulling is pretty darn mellow, and to do it during these times, I don't have any data on it, but I feel comfortable with the idea.
Yeah, and just like with kombucha too, start slowly,
exactly.
Work up. And I also would say avoid, sometimes you hear people add essential oils of oregano or peppermint, and yeah. I would not use those while pregnant since there's some evidence they can cause early contractions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you want to be careful with what you use in your mouth because the bottom line is this idea that what goes in the mouth stays in the mouth is not accurate, right, as you and I both clearly know.
Right.
Okay. Here's a question from Michael. I don't know. I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name there. I've been diagnosed with an egg allergy. I've struggled with candida and gut issues in the past. So many of your recipes include eggs. Do you think, or is there research that pastured eggs would still irritate this allergic response? And she's also read that the milk allergic people say they can have raw dairy. Would eggs be the same?
From what I've seen, the proteins in eggs will still be inflammatory, even if they're from pastured sources. But I have seen firsthand in our own family and in other people I know, being able to reverse those egg allergies with healing the gut, because all health goes back to the gut at some level, into that probiotic balance. So we use the gut and psychology program. It's called GAPS, and there's a book that explains it really well. But I would say I would deal with that and the underlying issue before trying to introduce the eggs again and give the body time to heal.
Truly. And I think that there's an important factor there that, and I'm going to plug somebody else's talk here as well. We have Gray Graham, the author of Pottinger's Prophecy, on day 7 of the summit. Gray goes into the subject of epigenetics, and which is kind of the truth behind genetics. Now, we all understand culturally, like, you're passed these genes from mom and dad, and it's kind of a lottery, and you're stuck with what you got. But actually, that's an outdated understanding of the genetic theory, and that epigenetics says that our genes are constantly changing and express themselves based on, and if I could put this in bold, I would, based on what we're giving ourselves as far as input. So diet plays a huge role in how our genes are going to express themselves. So just because someone has, for example, an allergy to eggs today, doesn't mean that in 6 months they will, in my opinion. You know, now I'm not an expert on this, and I'd love to get Gray's opinion on it. He will be on a call on Monday the 21st, but that's my take on it.
Yeah. And that is fascinating, the study of epigenetics, even how they're using that to explain how people can have a gene that would predispose them to cancer and not get the cancer.
Exactly.
Because it's based on the environment as well and the diet.
Right. I mean, exactly. I mean, Katie Shanahan is a friend of ours. She's a total rock star as well. She's going to be on the summit. I forget what day it is, folks. I'm sorry. She's going to be on the summit tomorrow is her presentation. And then she's going to have a live Q&A on Saturday. Dr. Kate Shanahan is the author of Deep Nutrition and Food Rules, and she goes into epigenetics. And, you know, the bottom line is the truth. Our biggest problem, folks, is the cultural blinders that we have chosen to believe are true and then live by. If we just look at the new information and the research, and that's what summits like this are all about. If we look at the new information and see, like, whoa, oh, okay, genes can turn off and on, which is a double-edged sword, because just because I'm healthy today doesn't mean that I'm going to be healthy in 5 years if I don't take care of myself today. And the flip side is true as well. For those of us always looking to create greater health in our system, oral health as well as system-wide wellness, you know, the beauty of this is if you implement regular sources of quality protein, if you heal your gut wall, If you make sure that you're getting the mineral content that you need, the fat-soluble vitamins that your body needs, you lower things like sugar and gluten in your diet, you're going to watch your body just literally turn around. It's just so profound to me how quickly the body responds.
Yeah, and children are even faster. That's what I always tell people. It's harder sometimes to get the children to make the changes initially, but they adapt so quickly and their bodies respond. It's amazing.
It's so true. That's so true. Okay. Question here from Nikki. These people are coming in. So you're answering questions and they've got follow-up questions, which is awesome. This is the beauty of this. How much gelatin do you use in your tea? And do you use regular tea or herbal tea at bedtime?
Good question. Well, I get gelatin during the day from bone broth, which is an awesome natural source. But at night, in my past pregnancies, I've always had trouble sleeping, especially in third trimester. And this time, what I've done that has been amazing is at night, I'll get like a regular size mug and put about a fourth of a cup of cool water in it and add a tablespoon of gelatin powder. And I use Great Lakes brand kosher gelatin just because I actually was able to talk to the company and verify that it's grass-fed and there's no hormones. Wow. And I stir it in, and the cool water tempers the gelatin so it will dissolve easier. If you just add it to hot water, it'll make clumps, which are really nasty if they get stuck in your mouth. And then I just add herbal tea, like chamomile is a favorite, or when I'm pregnant, red raspberry leaf is a favorite because that's also good for the uterus and for hormones.
Sure.
And then I just drink that about 30 minutes before bedtime and about 2.5 to 3 hours after eating. And the research I've seen shows that the gelatin is especially beneficial on a more empty stomach and before bedtime. And I've noticed that I've relaxed really well from that.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent. You're just such a wealth. Like, you've done the research. Like, I didn't realize that taking gelatin at night particularly was particularly beneficial. That's awesome.
And actually, a supplement note to go a little off topic. In the same way, I always recommend taking the fermented cod liver oil in the morning or anything with vitamin D in the morning. I noticed in some people I was working with, they would take it at night just when they took the normal supplements and they were having trouble sleeping. And finally, from researching, I realized it's because the body's getting that vitamin D, which tells the body on a cellular level, it's sunny outside. And so they were having trouble getting into the melatonin producing at sleep at that point. So that one's a good one to take in the morning.
Wow. Excellent point. I'm going to just quickly throw in a little kudos here. This is from Monique on Facebook. Katie, this talk is amazing. You speak so fluently and knowledgeably in a way that is accessible to everyone. I've been a reader of your blog for the last 6 months and use your recipes a lot. It was cool to hear your voice also, which I think is a kind of a novel, cool aspect. I was, you know, it's fun to be able to hear what you all sound like after reading your stuff for so long. She says, greeting here from an expat mama here in Finland. So,
Nice.
Your reach is far and wide.
Oh, thanks for the kind words.
Yeah, it's always important to get that, you know. So here's a good one and kind of a controversial topic. It'll be fun to hear your 2 cents on this since you are such a research fanatic on it. This question from Christian. I've heard that using baking soda on your teeth every day can gradually wear away the enamel because it's slightly abrasive. What are your thoughts on this?
That's a good question. I'm curious to see how you guys would answer this also. Yeah. But from what I've seen on, they have tables online of abrasivity ratings. I'm hoping I'm saying that right, abrasivity of different toothpaste. And baking soda ranks extremely low as far as being abrasive. And in fact, most toothpaste even contain baking soda. And I hear that from, I've heard that from a few dentists that, like, don't ever use baking soda, it'll wear your teeth down, but I haven't been able to find any actual science that backs that up. So I don't know that I would use it daily by itself, but I don't think it's harmful to add to a product that's being used. But what would you guys say on that?
Well, I think the devil's in the details here, like so often. First of all, I think what we really need to address here is mindfulness and awareness. If, for example, we take baking soda and we go about brushing our teeth like we were taught when we were 4, you know, with a big, you know, I mean, you got a bunch of kids running around, big gross body movements and scrubbing like, you know, we're going to come out with a whole nother series of free video tutorials talking about how to brush your teeth because we do not, by and large, as a culture, revisit this subject after we learn from childhood. And how on earth are we expecting to navigate to greater oral health if we don't bring awareness into these very fundamental techniques like brushing our teeth? So if you scrub your teeth like you're cleaning a grout line with baking soda on your brush, then yeah, I mean, you know, shoot, a brush itself can irritate the gum tissue if you scrub it unconsciously. So that would be my first suggestion, is to bring awareness. You know, pay attention when you're brushing your teeth. And I know it's a lot to ask because normally brushing the teeth is something that we do when we're rushing out the door in the morning or when we're crashing at night. So, you know, there's other implications, but to bring awareness into that couple minutes of time while you're brushing your teeth can really have a profound impact on the long-term oral health, in my opinion. That said, I think baking soda is fine. You know, some of the biggest proponents out on the internet that we found, that unfortunately we found after we scheduled this summit and have not been able to interview them, are big proponents of baking soda. In fact, you know, they more or less say to kind of gently attack your gums. You know, gum tissue, there's this principle that we like to, you know, that I feel is kind of like gravity. It's a law that we all have to abide by, whether we're aware of it or not, which is called use it or lose it. And use it or lose it, what this means is if we don't tell our gum tissue that we want it to stay there, then it'll go away. If we don't tell our bone density that we want it here, by moving our bodies in a vigorous manner, then it'll decline. So use it or lose it applied to gum tissue means we got to stimulate the gum tissue. Now, that said, the number two cause of receding gums is brushing the teeth too hard with a toothbrush that has rough cut bristles and is nasty and irritates the gum tissue. So you got to find the balance line there. But baking soda, I think, is fine. I use it. I don't use it every day, but that's where I stand on soda. Okay. I'm sorry for those of you who came to the call that were expecting Robert Gamble here. I was expecting him as well. And unfortunately, I've not seen him show up, but we're getting lots of golden gems here from Katie. Going back to questions on the call here. She says, this is from Alina. I eat coconut products and eggs every day. Do you know if I'm asking for food sensitivity down the road because of eating them every day? Should I have any breaks in eating them? Great question.
That is a good question. I would say it depends on your gut. The book that I mentioned, Gut and Psychology Syndrome, deals with healing the gut and sealing it so that those foods aren't getting into the body and creating that allergic reaction. So I say it depends. If your gut is not in the best state of health, it might be good to avoid not only those foods, but sometimes even foods like nightshades or dairy and especially grains for the short term until your gut health is really good. And then at that point, if your gut's functioning properly and you have proper probiotic balance and it's sealed, then there really is no reason to avoid foods if you're tolerating them.
Right. Right. I agree. I mean, there are some things that, you just have to support your immunological health and we need food in the system. The better the quality, the better, our body's going to run. Here's a question from Candy. I know you had an experience with orthodontics. I recently had my braces taken off and have the clear plastic retainer currently, but the orthodontist wants to talk about a metal permanent retainer. Do you have either, and what should be the lesser of two evils?
It's an interesting question too. I had braces when I was a lot younger and didn't know anything about oral health. I think if any of my children ever need them, I'll probably take a different approach with a holistic orthodontist who focuses more on widening the jaw versus moving the teeth. But I'm always leery of A, anything permanent in the mouth, and B, anything metal in the mouth. There's been several speakers who have mentioned how anything electric in the mouth can actually conduct and change the pH of the mouth and the whole electrical energy of the mouth. So personally, I'd be apprehensive of that. Granted, plastic probably isn't a great choice either. I hope my orthodontist isn't listening because I don't wear my retainer anymore. I've just gotten to a point where my teeth are pretty well set where they are. And instead of working on making sure I don't clench my teeth when I sleep or grind my teeth or things that would cause the teeth to move. And ironically, the only thing that's ever caused my teeth to shift was getting a filling in a molar a few years ago before I knew all this that changed my bite and it changed how a couple of my bottom teeth were sitting. So that's my own two cents. I'm not an orthodontist or a dentist, so that's not dental advice or anything, but that's how I've handled that.
Right. And I mean, we're here to pick your brain as a well-researched mother. That's arguably, you don't have to be the expert here. It's a pretty black and white one for me, frankly. Plastics, we don't know the long-term implications, and that it's kind of a drag, but we do know the implications of metal, and that's not good. So from my perspective, since you use the term lesser of two evils, plastics would be the lesser of two evils. Obviously, if you can get a harder plastic, the harder the plastic, the less the likelihood of it going to be kicking off plastic into the system. You take care of your liver and detox the liver so that you're shrugging off any excess estrogens, which all of us need to be doing anyways. That would really help. But, Dr. Hal Huggins, who presents on the last day, he's really the biggest hitter of this whole summit, so we saved him for last. Dr. Hal talks about the marriage between metals and microbes. And I'm not going to steal his thunder here because he's really the grandfather of modern biological dentistry. But it's a profound connection between having metal in your mouth in a slightly acidic environment, right? Because of saliva pH, in a slightly acidic environment, metal in your mouth and activating the bacteria in the system to produce more toxic toxins and more toxins than they would be normally. So it's an insane subject. So definitely check out Hal's presentation.
Yeah, and even having something permanent also, like we've talked about remineralizing teeth, and other presenters have mentioned that as well, but most of those have to be mounted on to a tooth with glue and adhesive that block the tooth from saliva and from the atmosphere of the mouth.
Yep.
So I would think that would also open up a potential for tooth decay underneath those areas.
Totally, yeah. I would get a second opinion. You know, I mean, if an orthodontist wants to put in something permanent, hello, you know, what, go talk to somebody else.
Yeah, medicine and dentistry, I always tell people, you can always say no to. You're the one in charge. You're paying them, so.
Truly.
Yeah, definitely. Truly.
I mean, in fact, Hal Huggins just came out with a new book called Patient Empowerment, which I love, and you'll hear more about that from us as well as at Hal's talk. And kind of the mantra in his book is just say no. You know, really, it's a self-empowerment issue. It's we as a culture, again, these cultural blinders, we as a culture see a white coat and say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. And it's in our best interest to not be arrogant, but to recognize that finding a quality practitioner to assist you is total gold as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, okay. And just like you said, I research everything, but I always think of that like with doctors and dentists, just because you're allowing them to assist in a certain area of your medicine or your dentistry and in your own life, you still have the responsibility for what happens. If there's a bad outcome, you're the one who's going to suffer. So we still, as individuals, have the responsibility of researching and making sure that we understand and are comfortable with whatever we consent to.
Totally. Totally. Here's a question from Stacy. Hopefully she's on the call here. Question is more about conception and pregnancy focused. And so since you are an expert in that field, really, she's transitioning to a nutrient-dense diet, but still not 100%. So she's still taking an over-the-counter prenatal multivitamin. She's concerned about too much vitamin A between cod liver oil, liver, raw milk, butter, and the multivitamin. What's your take on that?
There's a good article from the Weston A. Price Foundation that talks about how if you do all of these together as a whole and not just pick like, oh, I'm going to eat a lot of liver or I'm just going to take the cod liver oil, that they keep each other in balance, especially the vitamin D and the vitamin A. They both keep each other from getting too high of levels in the body. Mm-hmm. But I don't usually recommend a prenatal that has synthetic vitamin A, just because if you're going to get a toxicity, it's going to be from the synthetic version. So my personal philosophy on that is I take the fermented cod liver oil and folate and a lot of vitamin K2 containing foods before or during pregnancy, but I don't take any of the synthetic forms.
Right.
Just because those are more likely to cause a toxicity.
Right. Yeah, well put. We've still got a boatload of calls here and just a few minutes left, so I'm just going to pick what I can here. Question from Holly here, and I'd be curious your research and nutrition on this, Katie. How do you make sure you don't clench your teeth while sleeping? Any advice for someone who already is doing that?
I have seen that can be caused by certain, the research seems to be kind of divided. I've seen that it can be caused by certain deficiencies of B vitamins or by magnesium is a big one when it comes to anything dealing with joints and bones. I don't know which specific thing fixed it for me, but I know that in the last several years, I went from being a really bad teeth clencher at night to not at all. And what's changed is mainly my diet, like I talked about before, and then the supplements that I always take, which were the magnesium and the gelatin, fermented cod liver oil, and the probiotics. And I've seen some anecdotal evidence that it is also parasite-induced at times. The parasite infestation can cause the clenching, but I haven't had a lot of firsthand experience with that.
Right. Excellent. Here's a question from Jessica. What would you recommend for this is definitely from a mom to mom here. This is great. What would you recommend for treating a clogged tear duct for an 18-month-old? We'd prefer something natural and not an invasive probing or surgery. Any ideas there?
Depending on how severe it is, and if she's still nursing, it sounds weird, but breast milk in the eye actually helps with that.
Sure.
We always refuse the antibiotic eye drops at birth. That's just our own philosophy, but I've researched that and my backup plan is always if the kids ever get the clogged ducts or the any kind of infection in the eye is you actually can use breast milk in the eye, which is totally antibacterial. I've also seen coconut oil work for people before. I haven't used that personally, but I've heard of it working, rubbing coconut oil onto the eye when it's closed, since it has the antibacterial and antifungal properties, and then just using heat to help it absorb in. Yeah. So that would be what I would try.
Totally. I'm right there with you. Wow, so many more questions, but I think we've grilled you. You were expecting to be here with Robert Gammel and kind of be able to sit back and listen to all his good root canal stuff, but thanks so much, Katie, for fielding so many questions. I don't want to overwear our welcome here. Katie, the Wellness Mama, how can people find more out about you? I'm sure we got a bunch of your readers here on the call right now anyways, but please do us a favor and plug your stuff.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, definitely my website is wellnessmama.com, and there's links there to Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter and Pinterest. So anybody who wasn't able to get their question in, feel free to reach out there. Facebook messages don't seem to be working, but post on my wall and I'll be happy to help any way I can.
Perfect. Katie, thank you so much for your time. Aloha, folks. We will see you at the summit.